Candace Banks and her fiancé Keon Pittman are living a charmed life. They have a beautiful home in the suburbs and are expecting their first child. But Avis's seemingly devoted fiancé is cheating on her left and right. And when Keon meets his match in the beautiful and adventurous Carla Hughes, their steamy affair means that there is only room for one woman in Keon's life. Hello and welcome to The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, author of suspense novels about the dark side of love. And this week I'm putting a spotlight on the case I'm calling Three's a Crowd. A native of Vicksburg, Mississippi, known as a key battleground site in the Civil War, Avis Marie Banks was known as a smart and ambitious young woman. The middle of three daughters born to Frederick and Deborah Banks, she graduated from Warren Central High School in 1997 and later became the first person in her family to not only attend but graduate from college, cum laude no less, when she received her bachelor's degree in child development from Alcorn State University in 2001. Avis worked for Bright Horizon Daycare in Jackson, Mississippi as an assistant director and was a member of Locust Grove MB Church. She was known for her devotion to her job and even had dreams of opening her own daycare one day. The other thing she's dreaming about is marrying her fiancé, Keon Pittman, a handsome, college-educated schoolteacher who works for the Chastain Middle School in Jackson, Mississippi. Keon and Avis met at the gym in 2004, and right away, Keon is smitten with the smart and pretty Avis. Avis also falls fast, and it's not long before the two are inseparable. While Avis and Keon are a great match in terms of their education, work ethic, and dedication to excellence, like so many couples, they are polar opposites in terms of their personalities. While Avis is an introvert who prefers quiet nights in, Keon is an extreme extrovert who bartends part-time at a local Mexican restaurant, the ideal environment for someone who thrives on the energy and attention of others. Despite those differences, Avis and Keon are deeply in love. Her family loves him and welcome him with open arms. And despite only knowing each other for 6 months, Keon and Avis say, hey, you know what? When you know, you know. And make the decision to move in together. They decide to put down roots in Ridgeland, Mississippi, which is a suburb of Jackson. They buy a nice house, and as a bonus, Avis discovers she's pregnant. Everything seems to be going their way. Great careers, newly engaged, beautiful home, baby on the way. And because everything seems perfect, that means a big old pin is about to burst Avis and Keon's love bubble. And the pin comes in the form of a woman by the name of Carla Hughes. Born and raised in Greenville, Mississippi, Carla has led a charmed life, the epitome of a golden girl. As a child, she was an accomplished horseback rider, beauty pageant winner, and honor student. Education meant so much to Carla that in addition to obtaining a master's degree, she also secured a PhD. The one blemish on this beautiful portrait was a failed engagement that left her as a single mother to a little boy, with the devastating exception of being left at the altar when she was 2 months pregnant. Carla is someone who always gets what she wants, no matter what. Carla supports herself and her son as an elementary school teacher, but later takes a position as a language arts teacher at the same middle school where Keon Pittman works. Now, despite being engaged and with a baby on the way, Keon is hardly known for his ability to stay faithful. And that side gig that he has as a bartender, well, that of course gives him all kinds of opportunities to play around with other women. In fact, Keon has a lot of girlfriends, and they blow up his phone at all hours of the day and night. He goes on weekend trips with them. He even has them come to the house that he shares with Avis. But when he meets Carla in August of 2006, this is a different kind of spark. It's like, I don't know, like blue recognizing blue. It's like seeing somebody and knowing that, like, oh, well, this is different. This is someone that I'm really vibing with in a different kind of way. Carla is considered a pretty woman. She was in beauty pageants, so that tracks. And Keon is considered a good-looking guy. They are both outgoing, very social, love to party and have fun. Extrovert Carla is nothing at all like quiet Avis, and predictably, this is incredibly exciting for Keon. Carla and Keon get close fast. They are each other's shadow, always in each other's classrooms, always finding some reason to touch each other, be around each other, totally joined at the hip. It's very clear that it's not a matter of if Carla and Keon will hook up, but a matter of when. When comes about 3 weeks after they meet. Carla invites Keon to her apartment and makes this huge point of getting undressed in front of him because she's going riding or something. And of course, watching Carla strip down in front of him gets Keon all kinds of hot and bothered. And a few days later, he's back. And he and Carla are getting it on. Keon would describe having sex with Carla as a, quote, sexual adventure, a sexual fantasy. Carla is up for it all the time. And most importantly, she's also up for anything because there is nothing shy about her sexual appetite. Keon and Carla are doing the damn thing a few times a week. And when they're at school, they don't even bother to hide the fact that they're sleeping together, even though nobody really knows that for sure, but it's pretty obvious that they are. Carla also frequently comes to the bar where Keon works, and they even used their students to pass notes to each other, which, gross. Why? Just because you can. Why? The situation between Carla and Keon becomes even more intense when they head to Memphis over Labor Day weekend for a little lover's getaway. And while they're there, Keon tells Carla that he is not happy in his relationship with Avis, feeling that he and Carla would be the better match. Well, Keon is not the only one seeing stars, because as a single mother seeking love for herself and her son, Carla can very clearly see that Avis has the life that she wants, the one that was in her grasp before her fiancé broke off with her, a beautiful house in a nice neighborhood, an intelligent and handsome fiancé. Carla becomes singularly obsessed with this idea, and, I mean, obsession is a hell of a drug, right? Predictably, now that Keon has offered Carla a glimpse of, hey, it could be like this all the time, Carla starts pressuring him about how come and when and why not me and what's taking so long. Here's the thing, though. Keon is not serious. He's very unserious. Because at the end of the day, Keon is just talking. He's just running his mouth. He is just saying what he thinks Carla wants to hear. Because the truth of it is, dude has no intention of leaving Avis for Carla or any woman. As much of a jerk as he is, Avis is the woman that he intends to spend the rest of his life with. So now, it's Thanksgiving, and Keon and Avis, they spend the holiday in Louisiana with his mom. Well, guess who also decided to make the trip? Yes. Miss Carla heads to Louisiana with a friend all so she can be close to her boo. She, of course, demands that he come and see her, and he, of course, complies. When Keon has to leave, Carla is ticked, but what exactly did she think he was going to do? Keon tries to be reasonable, but at this point, there is no reasoning with Carla. Now, a logical person would say, you know what, this is getting to be a little bit much. Maybe let me dip out and focus on my fiancé and leave all this lunacy behind. But not our man, Keon. No. He is seriously on the hook with Carla, and in fact, he kind of gets off on all of this sneaking around, because why not, I guess, right? Carla continues to demand that Keon leave Avis and start a life with her and her son. But Keon is not budging. He likes the cake, and he likes eating it too. So while Keon may be planning to keep this dirty little secret going for as long as he can, Carla, she's not about that. So she tells Keon that she's pregnant. Uh-oh. What is a cheater to do? Apparently, Keon does not make the move that Carla wants him to, because she backtracks and says, oh, my bad, I'm not really pregnant after all. And instead of being sad, Keon is relieved, of course, because who wants to have two women pregnant at the same time? But that is also not the reaction that Carla wants. So to provoke him even more, Carla now threatens to mention it all to Avis and blow this affair wide open. Keon says, not so fast, because if you do that, I'm going to call the cops. Tell them that you've been stalking me, and then what are you going to do? November 29th, 2006. It's 8 p.m. Keon has just arrived home from coaching basketball after school. He pulls into his garage, and he finds a massacre. Avis is laying on the ground, drenched in blood. He runs to his neighbor's house and begs her to call the police, saying someone has killed his wife. When police arrive at the scene, Keon is holding Avis. She has been shot 4 times, stabbed repeatedly in the face and chest, and her throat has been slashed. Her pants have been pulled down, suggesting possible sexual assault. She's dead, and so is her unborn baby, a little boy she planned to name Keelan. Avis Banks is 27 years old. The initial working theory is that Avis, who was 5 months pregnant at the time of her death and 2 months away from walking down the aisle with Keon, possibly stumbled into a burglary in progress. After all, the house is trashed and the back door was kicked open, which is how the person got in. And an important clue in the form of a distinct shoe impression is left behind on the door. Despite this pretty good evidence, police have no real leads, and of course, suspicion turns to Keon almost immediately. The cops tell him he needs to come down to the station to get tested for gunshot residue, get blood samples, the whole thing. And hello, if you're the spouse, or in this case, the fiance, the cops are looking at you right away. I mean, this is hashtag homicide 101. And now, if you've ever watched Dateline, and we've all watched Dateline, this is fairly standard stuff in a murder investigation. Keon, however, is put out, angry, in fact, that the cops are looking at him as a potential suspect. So I can only surmise that he does not, in fact, watch Dateline. He's also coming off as unbothered about this tragedy. Detective Frank Dillard told Dateline that his first impression of Keon was, quote, self-centered. Did you notice Dateline? All right. Sorry. Everything that Keon said, according to what this detective said, was me. Detective Dillard also told Forensic Files that Keon was even laughing at one point when he was being interrogated. And the detective had to remind him, you know your fiance and unborn baby have just died, right? Right? At any rate, the cops persist in investigating Keon and, of course, in talking to Keon's colleagues, Carla's name comes up because, remember, these two were not souls of discretion when it came to their affair. Hashtag open secret. So cops bring Carla in to talk to her, and she's oddly nonchalant for someone being questioned in a murder investigation. First, she says Keon is just a friend, a colleague. Nothing sexual going on whatsoever. No, it wasn't a love affair, and so what if people saw us kissing? I mean, that's typically a pretty good indication of a boyfriend or someone you're at least banging the gong with. When she's asked if she has a boyfriend, she kind of laughs and says, well, no, not really. We broke up. And investigators say, you know what? Don't lie to me. Well, it's at that point that Carla says, well, you know, people do talk about us dating since we're always together. And well, yeah, they're right. We are sleeping together. It's very strange. Her affect is very strange. Very, very strange. Meanwhile, investigators put the crime scene under a microscope and realize that one and one are not adding up to two. Despite the house being trashed, nothing is missing. And even if it wasn't a burglary, it's an incredibly bloody crime scene. Avis was shot and stabbed. It's overkill, which typically points to a crime of passion. And Avis's pants being pulled down bring forth another possible motive. While there was no evidence of sexual assault, investigators believed this was done to misdirect them in their investigation. However, it becomes pretty clear that someone wanted to humiliate her, which again makes feel as though the murder was personal. But who and why? Everyone loves Avis. She has no enemies, nobody who would want to bring her harm. At least, not on the surface. Did Keon, panicked over the prospect of marriage and fatherhood, murder Avis and his unborn child? Was it one of his many girlfriends? Well, investigators bring main girlfriend, Carla, and Keon back in so they can pinpoint what exactly the two of them were up to on the day of the murder. So on that day, immediately after school and before he went to basketball practice, Keon makes a run to the grocery store for a few things. Then he takes those groceries over to Carla's apartment before he heads off to practice. And when practice starts at 5:30, Keon is there, ready to go. At around 7:45, he heads back to Carla's for his groceries, then makes his way home, calling Avis en route, except he says she doesn't answer. And also, after he finds Avis's body, after he finds his pregnant fiance dead and in the garage, he calls Carla because why? Why? You don't want the cops suspecting you and then you do something like that? I mean, make that make sense, please. Somebody, anybody. Now, despite all of this bizarre behavior of Keon's, he has a pretty solid alibi, so investigators have to let him go. And while investigators are still suspicious of Carla, they don't have enough to charge her with anything, so it starts to look as though Avis's horrific murder will go unsolved. But then, there's a break. In early December 2006, a local attorney calls the police station to say that he has a client who is in possession of a .38 caliber revolver, which, it so happens, is the exact same caliber of weapon used in Avis's murder. And the client is Carla's cousin.
Whoa.
So Patrick Nash, that's Carla's cousin, he says that Carla came to him and said that she needed a gun for protection because her apartment had been broken into or there had been some break-ins around the area, something like that. And being a good cousin, he loans her his .38 as well as a hunting knife. Curiously, 2 days later, Carla brings the gun back and it's empty. Patrick says, where are the bullets? I gave you this gun and it had 5 bullets in it. Carla says, I went for target practice. Now, I mean, this just sounds cuckoo clock to Patrick. And when news of Avis's murder hits the airwaves, he says, you know what? This is a little too suspicious and my name is Les. I ain't in this mess. And that's when he hires an attorney and they go to the cops. Oh, and the hunting knife that Patrick gave to Carla? Never recovered. Never found. Nobody knows what happened to it. Well, I guess one person knows what happened to it, but they're not saying. Okay, so now investigators have something to go on, and they hop to it. So first they run a ballistics test, and that shows that, yes, indeed, the gun that Patrick loaned to Carla is the exact same one used in Avis's murder. At this point, Carla hires her own attorney who advises her, look, if you know something, spill the tea. Her response is that she can't because he, meaning Keon, never admitted to her that he did it. Well, cops don't need that confession because the fact that she is in possession of the gun used in the murder is enough to charge her as an accessory. Now, despite this major step forward in the case, investigators still don't have definitive proof of who done it. So they keep digging. They search Carla's apartment and they find pictures of Keon. They find poetry that he's written to her, bona fide proof that yes, Carla and Keon are a thing. But that is not all that they find. Because remember that the back door of the crime scene at the house was kicked in, and in the process, a very distinct shoe print was left behind on the door. And oh, guess what? Surprise! Police find those exact same shoes in Carla's closet. Mic drop. Carla is charged with 2 counts of capital murder. According to the timeline that investigators put together, the night of Avis's murder, Keon stopped at Carla's house around 5 with his groceries before jetting off to basketball practice, where, as it turns out, he's texting with another woman because a player is gonna play. And as soon as Keon leaves her place, she's out the Carla is out the door behind him, beelining for his and Avis's house. She kicks in the back door, leaving behind that shoe impression, then ransacks the house in a pitiful attempt to make it look like a burglary has happened while she waits for Avis. Carla hears Avis pull into the garage and get out of the car. She then runs into the garage and shoots at Amos 5 times, using all of the bullets in the gun. 4 shots would hit Avis. The 5th one would go through the garage door and out into the street. And to finish what she came to do, Carla slashes Avis's throat and then pulls down her pants in an attempt to shame her. The time of death is estimated to be between 5:45 and 6 p.m. In addition to the shoes and the weapons, police track Carla's cell phone to the area around Keon and Avis's house, so there is no question. Carla did it. Police determine that Keon's alibi holds up and he is not charged in any way, shape, or form with Avis's murder or the murder of their unborn child. So now, while Keon is never charged with anything, there is some chatter, I guess, that although it's likely he did not know about the murders before they happened, it's possible, some people think, that he knew about them after the fact, but before police were called in. Apparently, a neighbor told cops that typically Keon would always park his car in the driveway and would use the front door to go into his house. But on the day of the murders, he used his remote to open the garage door, almost as if he was expecting to find Avis's body. You know, who knows if in one of those calls that he had with Carla, maybe she hinted at something, checked the garage, or, you know, who knows? We'll never know, of course, but it does make you wonder. Carla's trial starts in October of 2009, and it's the first time that she and Keon have seen each other since the day of the murder. So, you know, so much for that great love affair that they were having. And Keon makes it crystal clear that what he had with Carla was anything but a great love affair. He says the relationship was purely sexual, that he never intended to leave Avis, and that Carla never factored into his long-term anything. He even called Carla a, quote, piece of meat. Ouch. Just wanted to let her know that she meant less than nothing to him. Carla's defense team hits back, calling Keon a, quote, bona fide womanizer, accurate, and that Keon was the one wearing Carla's shoes, the shoe print, but which, I don't know, like how small are his feet? And as for her cell phone pinging off of towers near Keon and Avis's house, well, she had a friend who lived near there. I mean, yeah, she had a friend who lived near there. It was Keon, because that's who her phone records show she was talking to, she was having conversation with that night. Well, the jury doesn't buy it either, and after 8 hours of deliberation, they find Carla guilty on both counts of capital murder. The Golden Girl receives 2 life sentences to be served consecutively. No possibility of parole. Carla appeals, but they are denied. Investigators surmise that Carla wanted Avis's life, the house, the husband, the family. And the only way to achieve that was to get rid of Avis and the baby. Keon eventually moves out of state and starts a new family. He never speaks to Carla again, and he has no contact with Avis's family. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of The Dark Side of Love. I'm your host, Bianca Sloan, and show your love for The Dark Side of Love by visiting thedarksideoflove.com for show notes and transcripts. While you're there, sign up for my newsletter to be notified about new episodes, and you can also find a link to my Patreon page where you can access bonus material and other fun stuff. Learn more about my suspense novels about The Dark Side of Love by visiting biancasloan.com. Thanks for hanging out with me, and join me next time for another tale of love gone wrong. I'll see you on the dark side.